From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
If you have ever had to say, would you mind not picking your nose while you play with my cards? Then this is a show for you, because what we like to talk about here on this show are card games, board games, RPG games,
miniatures games.
That'd be role-playing games, wouldn't it?
Yes, like the pin number.
All kinds of tabletop games here on the show, The Dice Men Cometh, on the lovely Edge Radio, 99.3 FM, which is in full-blown radiothon mode this week.
Radiothon!
Trent and Mark joining you for another episode. How you going, mate?
I am well. I've had a good week. Really looking forward to tonight's show. Once again, we've got so much stuff jammed in that some bits are probably going to stick out the edge. We've got a fabulous Kickstarter update. We are talking to Matt Dunstan, an Australian designer. Look, we still call him Australian, even though he lives in the UK. I did joke on the interview that I was interviewing Board Game Royalty, but I tell you what, he's mixing it with the big boys in Europe.
Isn't he just?
We're going to talk about the Radiothon, and we're also going to talk about limited play. Now, but before we go on, I don't know if you've seen the number one hotness game on Board Game Geek, which I'm sure wasn't even in existence yesterday, is the game Lap Dance.
Oh, God.
Now, so far,
I don't want to talk about
so far, are so many threads on Board Game Geek about this game. The only thing that's out is a cover photo and a little bit of information about you managing a lap dancing club. And there are literally thousands of threads about sexism and exploitation of sex workers. I don't know if a lap dancer is a sex worker. But anyway, you know, to me, the most interesting thing about this game appears to be...
They're certainly not clerical stuff, but
No. The most interesting thing about this game for me was it's described as a game of hand management.
I do not want to dignify the Kickstarter for the lap dance card game.
It's not even a Kickstarter.
Any kind. What is it?
It's being produced by a real game company, Artibia Games.
I don't want to talk about it. Stop talking about lap dancers.
No more lap dancers tonight.
I want to talk about something sensible and mature, like a track by Killswitch Engage. Oh, that's better. Killswitch Engage. Very silly name. It's a song called This Fire Burns!
Oh!
Oh, don't touch it! It's so burny! And that's our little mood setter for the evening on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It's Radiothon week. We're asking you to show Edge Radio some love, and you can do that online on edgeradio.com.org.
Edgeradio.org.au.
Thank you. And we'll have deets on exactly how much we're asking and prizes you can win a little bit later in the show. Lap dance?
Yeah, I know. It's pretty sad. They're stretching for game. Although, you know, we were bagging them out, not this game company, but we were bagging out...
the game industry in general.
No, no, no. What was it? Quiltmaster or quilting?
Quilt show.
That's right. We did bag out Quilt Show. Because it was such a hokey theme. But, you know, being the manager of a lap dancing club, I mean, maybe they're trying to generate some buzz. I don't know.
Which they've done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this game has hit the top of the hotness list.
Yeah, it's number one on the hotness list.
On Board Game Geek, which is...
means it's the game that people are most clicking on or talking about.
In social media, that's right. And I just can't see any upside to any of this, though.
No.
And I mean, if you want to press a hot button just for the sake of it and create some controversy, sure, you can go ahead and do that. But really... Are you contributing to the betterment of the gaming industry?
That's right. It's not taking our hobby forward at all, that's for sure.
It's a mile backwards. Anyway, let's continue to take our hobby forward in a mature, adult, and equal way.
Absolutely.
Here on this show, The Dice Men Cometh. And have we been playing anything lately? My word, we have.
Yep.
Do you want to go first?
I have played a game. We've talked about it a bit lately, but I just wanted to revisit it again because it is a great game. One of our favourites, Francis Drake. Got it to the table at last Friday's Hobart Games Society meeting. I have been anxious to get it because it was only the second time that I played it, apart from the first time, which was the first time. And it had been a few weeks. We'd obviously had the designer on here giving us some strategy tips.
Haven't stopped talking about it on the show because it is such a great game and a great production.
It is a great game. And, you know, what I love about it is it's three turns. Mm. So it's like the pressure you're under to not stuff up is amazing because you haven't got time to recover. Anyway, so we rolled it out with five players, the maximum. It didn't drag. Like, it's just so action-packed.
At this point, we all know what we're doing, and it moves pretty quickly.
Yeah. Everyone had played it at least once, so it was great. It did move along. And so there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, a lot of backwards and forwards. And it was just a great, great game. I'm really enjoying it. Just starting to explore a bit of the strategy. And I remember what Peter Hawes had said in terms of you've got to put in one turn, you've got to do your trade mission so you can get your four trade goods because that gives you bonus points at the end of the game. And then at the same time, you've got to try and achieve at least once if you raid a fort, a city, and attack a galleon on the same turn, you get bonus points for those.
So you were paying attention to those tips.
Yeah, although
as well, were you?
The dilemma was, so my intention at the start of the game was to do the trading and then go out and do the other stuff. So I got screwed over on my first turn and I couldn't do the trading. So I was like, that strategy's out the window. But what I did manage to do was get the fort, the city, and the galleon on the first turn.
Mm, which gives you those bonus
points
for getting all three of them.
And I could see that I wasn't going to get the trading. There was no possible way I could get it. There wasn't enough turns. So I decided to get the fort, city, and galleon on the second turn and the fort, city, and galleon on the third turn. So I got it all three times, and I think I was the only one to do that. And as a matter of fact, I ended up winning the game very narrowly. My grand competitor who tried his little heart out, who was you,
I
beat you only by 3 points. And in fact, it wasn't until we lifted up the little treasure chests and pulled out those gems to add those up that my victory became apparent.
By just 3 points.
By 3 points.
And what did I do when I realised?
You cried.
And punched you in the arm.
That's right,
as hard as I could and called you an unbelievable bastard.
And look, it just shows the tension in that game that it really did go down to the wire. And because you did Peter Hawes' strategy, didn't you, where you got your trade goods?
Pretty much followed it to the letter. Where I slipped up was I attempted to do everybody else in the game over by taking a certain bonus card in the last round of provisioning, and what I realised too late was that strategy wasn't going to pay off. Rather than providing myself with an advantage, I slowed myself down by stopping to kind of, you know, stick the forks up at you guys.
Yeah, because I think in the last round you only had the two barrels, didn't you, which determine how far you can go on the board,
and that was all I needed.
But that then limits you to how many gems you could get. And if you'd had one more gem, you would have won.
Maybe. We can wonder.
Anyway.
I was within striking distance.
You absolutely were. It was very, very close. And look, Francis Drake, if you haven't played it, I highly recommend it. Australian designer, fantastic looking game, full of tension, strategy and tactics, really keep you engaged, love it.
I'm really glad you brought it up,
this
incident, because of course I was within a bee's proverbial of winning that night, and of course the grand tradition here is let's give it, because he's always losing his game. You're such a crap game
player. But people who can't understand what Trent's saying, he's saying that we should make fun of him because he always loses. Okay, we'll keep doing that.
And just recently, there's a whole list of things that I've been winning. Suburbia.
Oh, yes.
Posted that on the Dice Men Come Up Facebook page. Thank you very much. Won a game of that. Earth Reborn.
Yes.
Won the first game of that. Carcassonne.
Yes.
Played that with the family.
Yes.
Crushed my family into the dust. Thank you very much.
Including yourself.
Very proud of myself. Played another round of Dice Masters, Marvel Dice Masters.
Ah.
And just caned my opponent completely. The hex is broken. The stories are not true.
Except I'll only point out one thing to you.
Oh.
How many of those games did I play in?
Bum bum! So moving on, another game I've been playing lately is Condottieri.
Oh, yes.
We're moving from 1500s England and the Spanish Main to Renaissance Italy. Yes, it's very exciting.
Yes.
Historical theme tonight. on the Dice Men Cometh. This is a little small fantasy flight game with a very small unassuming box with a very frowny knight on the cover.
It is very serious looking, isn't it?
Look, your condottieri were Italian mercenary generals, and they led private armies and the cities in Renaissance Italy. This is how they juked it out with these little... They're military.
They juked it out! Hey. Oh, it's a pun!
They're military contractors from their day and age. Players are conquering various parts of Italy. You're placing the little black condottieri token to nominate which territory you're fighting for, and you're choosing the battle. And it scales really well, this game. Plays from 2 to 6 players. How many territories you're competing for scales up and down depending on that figure. And you're playing cards to form a battle line in front of you, and when you play, it's just one card each. You go around the table clockwise, and when you play your card, you announce what your battle line strength is.
So you're adding up numbers, aren't you?
Yeah. More or less, yeah. So you've got your mercenaries that are valued from 1 to 10, that's obvious. You've got drummer cards that double the value of all your mercenaries. There's spring cards that change the season for the entire battle. Spring will add bonuses to all the high numbers. Winter cancels spring, obviously, and then declares all the mercenaries are just worth one. So just winter's no good for anybody. Winter is coming, as they say. Yep. There's other special cards like the heroine, who's always worth 10, regardless. She's like a Joan of Arc figure. Fantastic art on this thing. There's courtesans cards who...
give lap dances?
No, not at all, but other special bonuses, thank you. There's a bishop cards, and there's these scarecrow cards as well, and that really... I won't go into it right now, but the scarecrow cards, for anyone who's looking at this, it's really all about playing those successfully. This is a fantastic, quick little card game where you can play up to 6 people in a half an hour, 45 minutes, and there's a real game to it where you'll just get, 45 minutes of intense swearing at your friends.
You make it sound great. I'm going to have to try it again because I keep telling you,
I
had that very bad experience the first time I ever played it and never wanted to come back to it.
The trick to it is that you get 10 cards each, okay, but you don't get new cards at the start of every battle. In fact, you don't get new cards until just one player is left with cards in their hand.
Okay.
So you're trying to...
Another hand management
hold
game.
On to the... Oh, grow up, will you? For God's sake.
No, I'm serious. It is a game of hand management.
Lap dances on the brain. All right, listen. We're going to go away and come back and hopefully you were a bit more sensible when you talked to Matt Dunson a couple of nights ago.
I tried.
All right, we'll do that next. That's coming up on the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Hand management. Love you, hate you, Claude Hay on the Dice Men Cometh at Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent and Mark... who took the time out, Mark that is, to chat to Matt Dunstan. Who is this man?
So Matt Dunstan is the designer of probably the most notable game, Relic Runners, which was produced by Days of Wonder. A fantastic game where it's Indiana Jones-style art and beautiful production values. And at the moment he's in Cambridge... Yeah,
well, hang on.
Oxford, yeah.
Well, let's play the interview and have a listen. If you've ever asked yourself, hey, can an Australian board game designer make it big time? Here's a bloke who has.
So continuing our series of Australian board game royalty, today I'm speaking with Matt Dunstan, who's actually not even in Australia. We've exported him to the UK. Matt, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Hi, Mark. Thanks. I think royalty is a bit too much, really.
Before we talk about some of your games, one of the things that our listeners always like to know is what you've been getting to the table lately.
Unfortunately, between designing and writing my thesis for my PhD at the moment, not much has got to the table. I did get the chance. I was at Gen Con a few weeks ago, and I got to play a couple of the new releases there. So I played 5 Tribes from Days of Wonder, which was excellent, and Abyss as well from Bombix and Asmodee.
Oh, nice.
So that was fun, but I've just actually moved, and I have a nice game collection that currently is just all sitting in boxes because I don't have any room for it, so I don't get much to the table, unfortunately.
The game that's brought you into the limelight is Relic Runners that you published with Days of Wonder. I am a Days of Wonder fanboy. The very first game I bought when I sort of experienced my own board game renaissance was Pirate's Cove, and shortly after that, Shadows of Camelot. I totally am up with their design aesthetic. They do produce beautiful games. Tell us a little bit about Relic Runners and how you got involved with Days of Wonder.
I mean, I agree with you about that. They actually, the reason I got back into board gaming too, I think I bought Ticket to Ride Europe when I was in Prague about 5 years ago, and I think that's the reason I got back into board gaming, which was sort of nice. But I had made this, it was sort of my first probably finished game, really, that I had when I just moved over to Cambridge. I decided to enter it into a board game design competition called Europa Ludi, which was sort of a combined Spanish-French competition. I was lucky enough to get chosen as a finalist, and even though it didn't actually win that competition, a representative took a lot of the finalists' prototypes to the Essen Game Fair in Germany later that year. And actually, I knew he had the games, but I didn't know which companies he was even actually meeting with. A couple of weeks after Essen, I got an email from a person at Days of Wonder, which was completely sort of out of the blue,
yeah.
Asking a few rules questions. And I think maybe only 1 or 2 weeks after that, we'd basically signed a contract.
Wow.
It was definitely not a usual kind of experience, pitching and selling a game at all.
Brilliant, because I know we do hear from designers so often the huge, laborious process they go through and how it's years and years and years. How long from when you started designing this game to when it hit the shelves?
It would have been 2 years, but in a way that... It's not exactly... So, I mean, the game took about 3 months to design, and then it was with this competition for about 9 months. Actually, Days of Wonder had a really quick turnaround from their point of view. I mean, they only really had it for maybe 9 months from contract to on the shelf. So that was... And they did an amazing job.
And did they make many changes from your original design?
Yeah, they did, actually. I mean, I'm not much of a thematic designer, and so my original game was called Wandering Monks. So you're essentially monks wandering around ancient China trying to give help to villagers in the mountains, kind of this kind of feel. But they saw something better for it, and they saw this sort of adventuring sort of Indiana Jones style in the jungle. So they changed the theme and changed a little bit of how the game was implemented to match that theme. They made one or two other sort of, one sort of substantial change to how one of the mechanics worked. But apart from that, actually, I think I really just trusted them to see what they liked and what they thought they could improve. You can design a game yourself and it can be very good, but realistically, it'll never be the best game it can be until someone else has worked on it a bit, I think.
So now you've got a couple of games coming up soon and you're off to Essen very shortly, is that right?
Yeah, so Essen's in about 5 weeks now, so it's the slow build up of even though I have games coming out, it's what I'm more focused on is all the other prototypes I have to get ready to show to publishers.
Right.
At the fair, AEG is releasing Empire Engine, which is sort of a new game, which is a co-design with Chris Marling, who's also from Cambridge, and it's a small micro game essentially, so fitting into the same thing as say Love Letter. It's a bit of bluffing. It's sort of taking, if you're familiar with the Rondel mechanism from
yes.
Gertz games, it's sort of taking that mechanism and then putting it into a micro game.
And look, the most important question, is it beer proof? Is it sort of, because we had talked recently on our show about, you know, small games you can take to the pub and play with your friends.
You definitely can. We've played it in the pub many times. The only difficulty is, I suppose, is this version will have square cards, so it might be a bit difficult to sleep.
Yeah, yeah. And look, you know, they can always double as coasters, can't they?
That's true. That's true. Just like what's the Skull and Roses game.
Which yeah, yeah. Exactly right. So how do you find working with AEG as compared to Days of Wonder?
I don't know if it was that different in a way. I think... The games themselves are very different, and I think that probably changed the development process. I mean, this is a much smaller game, so I
yes.
think realistically there wasn't much to change because, you know, the game either works or it doesn't. What they brought was they had a really nice vision for how the game could look and how it could fit in this line of micro games that they were doing, so it has sort of a nice continuity between the series. And they got Franz Vorwinkel, who's sort of a really veteran sort of artist who's done, for example, a lot of Magic the Gathering, original Magic
yes.
the Gathering art, and many, many other games to do the art for this, which was really, really great because one of the really important things was the graphic design of the cards. You've got to try and really clearly show these kind of rondels on some cards so that everyone can see them in different orientations, and I think he did a really good job doing that.
Obviously art plays a big part, particularly in such a small game. Now, do you find this whole micro game theme, it seems to be going gangbusters?
Yeah, no, it's true. It's So the funny thing, in a way, was this game was originally offered as a free print and play. So a fellow designer here in Cambridge, Brett Gilbert, set up this site called goodlittlegames.co.uk. And the idea was that all the games would fit on two A4 sheets of paper. So usually it would be 18 cards maximum. He quickly sort of accumulated a lot of games on this site. There's probably, I think, about 11 or 12 games there now. But this was kind of before we as designers thought that you could sell these kind of games, because you always thought that there wasn't really much of a market for such a small, you know, the margins were very low. Would people really pay money for something realistically they could print out themselves? And so this site was sort of set up to sort of get people to play and, you know, get the games out there nonetheless. But then Love Letter happened, and I think a lot of companies took note that actually they can sell these games really well. The public was really receptive to them. And now, as you said, there's sort of been this explosion of many different micro games, many different publishers. As a designer, it's really nice, actually, because it means that, you know, when you have these small ideas, there's a chance to see them, you know, published in the light of day. And I, you know, I've got a few other games I'm working on in that light. The only other thing is you can get a little bit trapped. I like making longer, not long games, but sort of more medium weight games. And sometimes it's a little hard because it's so easy to make so many small games because they're easy to test and easy to get to the table, you know, in the pub or something. And sometimes it means that you just never get to these longer games that you really need, that you really want.
And so that's all happening in Essen in the coming weeks. And then how far away is Elysium? I've heard a little bit about it. How far away is that?
I am not exactly sure. I think it'll definitely be next year sometime. It possibly sometime in the first or second quarter next year. I can say so. It's going to be published by Space Cowboys, who did Splendor and Black Fleet so far. So that,
oh, wow.
A new French sort of studio within Asmodee. And this game is a co-design with Brett Gilbert, who is the aforementioned Good Little Games founder. It is essentially, it's sort of a drafting game set in ancient mythical Greece. You are a demigod, and you're trying to earn the place in sort of the pantheon of gods. And to do that, you're trying to build your legend. And your legend is comprised of various followers and deeds and quests that you're doing in order to be sort of reckoned in Elysium, in the heaven equivalent of ancient Greece. So sort of a drafting game where you have all these different cards which represent these different heroes and deeds, and you'll draft them and hopefully use them to gain prestige with the gods, and then you're hopefully trying to promote them into your legend in Elysium.
Okay, and look, I do have to ask the question that's on every geek's tongue. How did Matt Damon get the time machine and get back to ancient Greece, and how does his exoskeleton fit into this game?
I can't say that we thought of that, to be honest, unfortunately. Maybe that'll be something for the expansion, I imagine.
I am disappointed no Matt Damon mini, but, you know, look, it does sound like a really great, great game. So good luck with that one. Now, can you, we're always after the exclusive here on the Dice Men Cometh, so can you tease us about some of the upcoming games that maybe the word on the street isn't quite out there yet, and we can get the exclusive? What's coming down the pipe?
There will be, hopefully, a Kickstarter. I will have actually probably my first Kickstarted game, most likely very early next year. There's a small dice game that I've been working on that's sort of a sort of two-player dueling spaceships game that might be seen on Kickstarter sometime in the future.
Brilliant. And anything else?
Yeah, I've got another one that we're still sort of working out the details with that, and just working on the prototypes, really, and who knows, at Essen I might have more to say, unfortunately.
Yeah, and look, it sounds like this is going to be a 10-year PhD because you're spending all your time designing games?
Well, so I'm at the end of my third year. So I think actually in this, it's going to be a very interesting next 5 weeks, because in this next 5 weeks I both simultaneously have to prepare about 8 different prototypes for Essen and finish my thesis of about 100 pages. So,
oh, wow.
I think this is a bit of the crunch time, but hopefully I'll finish the PhD this year, and then I'm thinking of taking a little bit of time off to try and design full time for a little while. But I think after some conversations with, I got the chance, a really nice chance to meet Antoine Bowser and Bruno Cathala at Gen.
Yes.
And talking to them about them with game design, it definitely, even when you're as successful as those two excellent designers, it still is not necessarily an easy full-time job. So I think I'll be balancing two pastimes for a while yet.
Scott Nicholson quoted famously, you know, that he got 50 cents per copy of his game Tulip Mania. I don't know whether you're making much more money than that.
No, that sounds about right.
You probably can't say.
No, it's about that. It's about that.
Yeah, okay. Look, Matt, thank you so much for talking to us on The Dice Men Cometh. Any parting thoughts you want to leave with us about Australian listeners?
I really want to encourage Australians to keep designing games. I think that's where I started designing games. I was really lucky. I was in Sydney and I met with people like Phil Walker-Harding, Sushi Go fame. And I think it can be a really good hub for people doing games. I think it's a bit hard. You're a bit far away from the big fairs, but it's great to see more and more designers making games in Australia. So I'll come back sometime and there'll be this great environment to work with some people there.
Okay. Well, look, thank you so much for talking with me and thanks for getting up so early Cambridge time to
That's
have
fine.
A chat, and all the best in Essen.
No, thank you very much, Mark, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you again, Matt Dunstan, Australian board gaming royalty on The Dice Men Cometh.
You're listening to Edge Radio 99.3 FM. You really are. And...
Mark, you've sat down behind the desk for all of about 20 seconds... And everything started going haywire already. What have you done?
Yeah, look, that's weird because it is set to stop at the end of that Lulu and the Page Turners song.
Interesting.
So anyway, I think we've... No, it's still playing in the background, but I'll just get the sound turned down. You're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh. That was Lulu and the Page Turners, who just didn't want to stop. A great Tassie act with her song House of Cards. And incidentally, she was one of the headline acts at the Edge Radio birthday party and Radiothon launch.
And look, clearly from the sounds of that, we need to invest a little bit more in the training of some of our staff here at Edge Radio. And you might be able to help out with that by supporting the Edge Radio Radiothon, which is happening right now. We're asking people to show Edge Radio a little bit of love, and in particular shows the Dice Men some love. We've been talking about this for the past few weeks, and I'll just very quickly again, we can't do this podcast without the fine, fine people behind the scenes at Edge Radio and without the ongoing existence of this radio station. So please, if you're a fan of our show, it's not like we're going to see any of the action out of this. We actually just want to keep things up and running in here. So become an Edge Radio supporter. Log on to edgeradio.org.au for all the details. Prizes that can be won include prize packs from Blunston, valued at $200 each, with boots and belts and socks and key rings, a personal print and design package from UniPrint, 1 month membership at the Uni Gym if you happen to be, you know, in the area in Hobart Town, $200 worth of hair care and cuts and what have you from Some Hallucination Hair. We got a custom skateboard from Jimmy Street and Skate, 3 nights accommodation at the Alabama Hotel in Hobart Town, dinner and a show for two at the Republic Bar and Cafe, and two personally fitted Anchor wetsuits. Ooh. Plus a prize exclusive to the Dice Men Cometh, a $50 voucher for Good Games Hobart, which has just opened up last weekend in Brisbane Street in Hobart. Mike and PJ and the lads running the place. And
Mike's wife.
Been going great guns. So far, their grand opening happening this coming weekend.
Yes.
And we've got $50 to spend there for any supporters. Well, not for any supporters, but look, you can go into the draw. And here's how you go into the draw for that specific prize.
Mm-hmm.
Log on to edgeradio.org.au. Take the PayPal option to, become a supporter. And then there's a little sign in there saying, you know, send a message to Edge Radio. Click on that and just make sure you say hi to Dice Men Cometh or I'm supporting Dice Men Cometh in there. If you do that, you'll go into the draw for that voucher plus all the other prizes. We're looking for $50 for people to become a supporter, $20 concession. It basically means you can make your money back and get it in games, courtesy of the good people at Good Games.
And I did jump on, log on, and become a supporter myself. And I do understand that being a friend or family of the show, I'm not going to go into the draw. But that's okay, I might win one of the other fabulous prizes that Edge Radio have on offer.
Listen, enjoyed your interview with Matt Dunstan.
Mm-hmm.
Was shocked, however, shocked and appalled to learn how much a game designer's making per unit sold.
Look, he, it, I think he didn't really want to go into it, but that figure that I dropped that I mentioned a couple of times in this show that Scott Nicholson said where he was getting 50 cents per a copy, you know, Matt said that's not far off.
Wow.
So, look, maybe it's a dollar, I don't know, but, you know, that's a lot of units you've got to shift.
You know, I suppose the publishers and the distributors, I mean, they're the guys with all the risk, aren't they? Because they're much more heavily financially invested into it.
Yeah, and, I mean, a lot of those games, you know, if you say a $50, $60 game, the production cost of a lot of those games is probably $20 maybe,
mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a huge proportion when you take out the retailer has got to have a 20-30% margin in there somewhere.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There's not a lot left.
And then shipping those things around,
yeah.
Because a lot of the games these days, I mean, people are demanding good quality components and lots of them.
Yes.
That means extra weight, which means expense, but still 50 cents per unit sold.
Yeah.
I mean, because the design is the most heavily invested in time. You know, and this is the classic thing of your creative guy is the guy that gets done over at the end of the whole process.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure what an Australian author makes per book sold.
Yeah.
But I'm a wild guess. 50 cents might not be that
okay,
far.
Right.
That far off.
I thought it might be a bit more, but I have no idea.
I honestly don't know, but I do know
mm-hmm.
that if you're an Australian author and you're trying to sell books in this market, well, let me ask you, how many books do you think you'd have to sell within Australia to be considered a bestseller?
Is it 10,000?
Much less.
Oh, really?
5.
Oh.
You're not making a living out of selling 5,000 books, buddy.
Not if you... Well, if you make $5 a copy, and we're saying you probably don't make anywhere near that.
No.
Exactly, you're right. I mean, that's... Just to survive, you'd be lucky if that's going to fund you for 3 or 4 months.
It just doesn't.
You've got a family.
It just doesn't add up.
Yeah.
And so I was also surprised in Matt Dunstan's interview there, he talked about Bruno Cathala, who is he Belgian or French? I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, he's worked with Days of Wonder
yeah.
for many years. You know, a couple of those Days of Wonder games that I mentioned, I had, he was one of the, and a lot of those use co-designers, he was one of the designers in a few of those games.
One of the hot designers of the moment. Now, this year alone, he's got Abyss, which has just come out,
yep.
Five Tribes,
yep.
Both of which are, you know, part of the new hotness. He's also got another game called Madam Ching, Desperados of Dice Town, Dragon Run,
wow.
And an expansion for an old game of his called Cyclades.
Yeah.
Does he have to put out that amount of stuff because he's only getting 50 cents per unit?
Yeah, it makes
per
you
unit?
Wonder, doesn't it?
I mean, is that what you have to do if you're going to be a full-time game designer and make a living out of it, is just spew out product non-stop?
Yeah, and I did note... he seems to have been at the last two or three Gen Cons, Board Game Geek Con. I think he might have been at PAX as well. Like half, he must be spending half his time traveling to game conventions.
And then the other half actually designing
yeah,
all the stuff
yeah.
in hotel rooms
yeah.
all the time.
And, you know, you do hear the story of, with a lot of designers, how, you know, these projects take years to get out. And
yeah.
obviously, you know, Matt was a bit of a perhaps... exception where he got the Relic Runners
he
game.
He got really lucky.
Yeah, yeah, in quite a few months.
Yeah, yeah. That's,
although he did go through a competition and sort of win his way to that
sure,
that
but
stage.
that's not the normal story.
No.
Yeah. So I guess it just gets back to that idea of if you are going to design a game, don't think that you're going to have a bestseller. Don't think you're going to invent the new Monopoly, right? And that you're going to make $1 million, because it's just not going to happen. If you're going to do it, if you're going to sink that much time into it, do it out of love, because Matt's right. We are miles away from where all the action happens,
yes.
or all these big fairs where people actually do sell their prototypes. You've got to put so much time and money into this thing, and you could just be one of the ones that falls by the wayside. It's really heartbreaking. I guess the way out of that, though, is Kickstarter. You know, if you do get something that you think is worth putting out there, Kickstarter's the answer.
Well,
isn't it?
I imagine it's why it is so attractive, because it's not taking you years and going to all these conventions, booking meetings with design and with game companies to sit down and pitch a game time after time after time. Then they take it away and they think about it. I remember Scott Nicholson again. You know, he had a game he pitched. They took it away. They sat on it for 6 months. They fiddled with it a bit. They gave it back to him and asked him to make some changes. He gave it back to them, and then they said, "Oh, you know what? I don't think we're going to do anything with this after all." You know, it went nowhere.
But then again, that process of getting external input from professionals can make the game better, much better than it would be if you just cooked it up in your garage in 5 minutes and put it on Kickstarter.
Yeah, and I guess for every Alien Frontiers, that massive, popular Kickstarter, you've got all those games whose names we don't know because they either come out to no fanfare at all and quickly disappear, or they don't actually come out at all.
And talking of Kickstarter, you've been combing through it.
Yeah, we are going to have a Kickstarter update up next. But before we do, I'm saying to my son, who reckons we don't play any music later than about 20 years ago on this show, get it right up, your son, because here is some new hotness. You never on time unless... There you go. We'll get that one up, yeah. That was Dire Fricks with Running It. I love it. It's Aussie hip-hop. It's hot off the presses. In fact, it's hot out of the CD bin here in the Edge Radio studios because that's where he found it when he was on work experience.
And listen, Will, if you reckon I don't play any metal tunes that are, you know, from later than about the year 2000, I have irrefutable proof of otherwise, buddy. I'm playing. I'm up with the kids.
You, yeah.
The hot stuff.
I think we played a lot of new stuff. Get that.
We try our best. Jesus, what are you going to do? We're both at the other side of 40. I mean, it's not our fault, is it?
Yeah. Anyway, you know it's time for...
You and your bloody theme music.
Oh, yeah, baby. It's time for... this. It's time for Kickstarter. A Kickstarter update. And this week, it's not just the Kickstarter update. It's the Kickstarter / Possible / Indiegogo update.
Because as we were saying, the crowdfunding model has transformed the tabletop gaming industry, where people can get any idea out there and up there and funded and out to people. And here's a list of hot projects at the moment.
Now, interesting, because there wasn't a lot of new stuff out on Kickstarter. Just a quick recap of a couple of things. Goblin Quest RPG, which is an Australian production that we said was doing really well. It's just about to wrap up. 500% funded.
Yeah, but were they only asking for $10
no,
or something?
No, it was quite... I didn't make a note of that one in my half-assed preparation. I didn't make a note of anything, but no, it was about $10,000 they were after or something. I think they've raised over $50,000. It's been really popular. And most interesting, Destroy My Jeep. Remember that? I spoke about the guy who was basically just going to get... wanted to be paid for trashing his Jeep because it was such a terrible car. It never got up the first time. Destroy My Jeep Round 2 got funded!
Yeah.
He raised $15,000
for people who just
to smash his Jeep. Well, mostly he's going to smash it and film it. But anyway, a couple of new things on Kickstarter this week. One we've talked about in the past, and it's quite exciting, Bomb Squad.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah, so that co-op game where you're driving a little bomb disposal robot around. It's got 3 more weeks to go still, so plenty of time to get on. It's already raised $14,000. It's only been on a couple of days, and they're aiming for $40,000, so clearly it's going to get funded. Look, I'll tell you one thing that struck me as strange about this game, though. It has a Hanabi mechanic.
Yeah,
being that game where you hold your cards backwards, and your friends and family basically give you hints about what cards you've got, and then you play them. So it has that sort of system, and at first I was scratching my head going, what has that got to do? Am I driving a bomb disposal robot with a blindfold on? But I did watch a video, and it was explained in terms of, you know, it takes a team to drive a bomb disposal robot, and you might have the sniper who's up on the roof who can see through his scope, so he's only got vision of a little bit of the situation, and he sees a guy walking backwards and forwards or whatever just for a split second. Then you've got someone else who's listening in with perhaps a microphone, and they hear a bit of the information. So it's all about everyone in the team has a little bit of information, but you really have to work together as a team to build the full picture of what's happening to get the robot in there.
Yeah, yeah. Bomb Squad, I think it's safe to say, is this week's big Kickstarter project in board gaming land from Tasty Minstrel Games. We've had quite a few hits in the past. Tasty Minstrel Games are a sort of up and coming company. And I was excited about this, but look, I got to say, this has got one of the dumbest promo videos I've ever seen.
Yeah,
that's got its really terrible voiceover and stuff in it, and it talks about this idea of situational awareness being a group effort, but I don't know. I kind of liked it more when I was thinking it was going to be more like Flashpoint and, yeah, one guy would be the sniper, yeah, or someone else is the negotiator. But now it turns out that everybody's driving this robot using this Hanabi backwards card mechanic.
Yeah, yeah.
Hanabi's a great game, yes. Don't get me wrong, but that made me want to kill people. That yes, I was playing yes. with that game because there's only certain things you can communicate.
Yeah, the communication mix-up.
Now, if I'm trying to drive a bomb disposal robot and save people's lives while I'm doing that, that's not conducive to saving
that's
lives.
Right. While the bomb is ticking down, and the guy Rado runs through, who does some really good videos. He had a towel around him because he was dripping in sweat at the tension that created in this game because they were yelling at each other like, no, that card. Look, it looks like fun.
But not a relaxing experience.
No. And look, maybe in the same...
A bit like disposing of a bomb.
Well, I just say, or maybe in the same vein, this next game, described as America's favourite pastime, Divorce, the game.
Right, yeah.
It's a two-player game, funnily enough, and the idea is you want to end up with the greatest share of stuff between the two of you.
Yeah, because whoever dies richest wins.
Yeah, that's right. Or you want to deny your partner of the stuff. And you can. And it has the kids in it, so you can fight over the kids.
Tear them in half.
You can burn stuff, so your partner can't get it.
You tell me you can't burn the kids.
No, I don't think you can burn the kids, but you can, you know, burn things. So, look, it's got 2 weeks to go. It's already 93% funded, which is, they're after $5,000. Sad thing is, it's a card game. It's $20 for the game, but if you want to get it to Australia, it's $20 for shipping. Although you can
a deck of cards.
It is basically just a deck of cards, but you can do the print and play version for $5, so that's not so bad. Another really interesting one on Kickstarter, it's called Stuff and Nonsense. It's the game about Victorian adventurers who never actually go on an adventure. So they sit in their gentleman's club, brag about their adventure, then go round London gathering bits of stuff that they can use to fabricate the fact that, oh, I've just come back from deepest, darkest Africa, where in fact it's all bullshit. So it sounds really funny. It's actually, it's got 3 weeks to go. It's already 150% funded. They're only after 25,000. They've made a lot more than that. It's $30 for the game and $15 to ship to Australia. It does look like a lot of fun. And what have I got here? Oh, this one really grabbed my attention.
Oh, God.
A man eats 400 Minties in 30 minutes. That's a Kickstarter, believe it, and he's going to videotape it.
No man can eat 50 eggs.
Surprisingly, I don't think he's raised a dollar yet.
How many Minties?
400 Minties in 30 minutes.
Make it 520 minutes and I'll give you $5.
There is a group in Hobart who are trying to raise funds for a YouTube channel called We Shoot Stuff.
God.
And, you know, it's a local production. Clearly, they're going to shoot or blow up stuff. They've got 11 days to go, and so far they've raised $0.
How much money did Stuff Your Money Down a Rat Hole end up making again?
I think it didn't make much more than the $55 that it had when we talked about it.
But let me tell you, that money went down the rat hole.
It absolutely did. Now, what is this one? Possible. So I looked up, someone suggested I look on Possible.
Sure.
There were no board game projects on Possible, but there may be one time. So I had a look. Indiegogo. Funnily enough, there were a lot of miniature type projects, but very few board games. But one worth mentioning, which is not a board game, but it is about board games. There's a guy who makes videos called Watch It Play.
Oh yes.
And I watched his Marvel Dice Masters video, which taught me how to play the game. It's fantastic.
This is the Canadian dude.
Yeah,
his name
look,
escapes me.
He has averaged, in the last year, he's averaged putting out a video every 2 days.
Wow.
It's quite amazing. So he does playthroughs and instructional videos. He was trying to raise $36,000. It's still got 2 weeks to go, and he's already raised $47,000. So it's pretty amazing.
For making instructional videos.
Yeah, yeah. Although, he does put a huge amount of effort into it. They are really polished. An interesting thing about Indiegogo, you have an option as the producer of a project to have what they call the flexible funding model, which means even if you don't get funded, you still get all the money. So it's not like if it doesn't get funded, you get nothing. So you get all the money anyway. And interestingly, of course, Indiegogo was most famously used by Tabletop Season 3, where they raised $1.4 million for Season 3. One more, a Tasmanian project of note on Kickstarter. Help send Fatty Esther to UK. It's actually a Tasmanian three-piece punk band. They're trying to raise $1,500 to go and tour the UK. They have raised about half. They've still got 19 days to go. So if you're in Tasmania, you want to support a local... local fat band, a local punk band called Fatty Esther. They look quite slim, actually. Help send Fatty Esther to the UK. That is my Kickstarter / possible / Indiegogo roundup.
I do also note that in your research, though, you've come up with a whole bunch of really interesting numbers on what's been doing well in Kickstarter over the past couple of years. We've got some great data, which we'll go into next week on the show.
Absolutely.
Don't forget, it's the Edge Radio Radiothon. All the deets, and make a donation and become a supporter, edgeradio.org.au. We're out of here.
We're out. See you next week. Thank you. Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.